The Asian Classics Institute presents The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in March of 1998.
This is the beginning of Class 11.
Review for the final examination, and then we'll also do a little bit of debating later on. There's some nice little tiny debate that we'll do, okay? Very powerful one, all right? So, as usual, all the questions on the final come from the quizzes, and I'm going to go over some of the questions that might appear on the final, and at the end of this class, you're going to get the answer keys for all of the homeworks. Is that right? Yeah. Because we want you to be able to see the expanded answer. Sometimes I don't have time to go through the whole detailed answer during the class. So you'll be able to study the keys even for the last two classes, okay? That you probably won't get your homework back on time for that. So this way, you have the official ones. I think they fit on both hands. If you make them about 6 points, okay? But you probably don't even have to bother. You can just write it out and bring it into class with you, you know? Okay. We'll start with good old Jay Siller. Nobody could ever show me the Shung for this class. The Shung means the classical text on which this class is based. Okay. You tell me, there is a Shung for this class? The Shung. Shung. Give me. Tell me. Show me. Don't saw me. Just show me. It's too early to saw me. You didn't beat me yet. Show.
Pramanika Vartika.
Yeah, Pramanika Vartika. Perke la Karisha. In Tibetan? In Tibetan? Shagi Meme. Yeah, there is no. No, we'll go around with it. Pramana is what? Valid perception in Tibetan? Tema? Namda. Okay, Tema Namda. You gotta know the book you're studying, okay? It's embarrassing if you don't know the book you're studying, right? Nobody could ever show me the author of that text. She's smart. She's not Thamadupi until she thinks of the answer. Okay. Thamadupi? So you can show me the author. The shot. Who? Huh? Dharmakirti Yimbatha. Dharmakirti Yimbatha. Huh? The? Hey. Chiki Dapa De Tomapo Yimbatha. You tell me Dharmakirti is the author of this text?
Duh.
Maimbatha Dharmakirti, maybe. No such thing as Dharmakirti.
Master Dharmakirti, the Naga's great disciple.
Master Dharmakirti.
The Naga's great disciple.
Oh, Master Dharmakirti. Ah. You don't call Rinpoche love song, okay? You don't call Dharmakirti Dharmakirti. Master Dharmakirti. All right? Please. All right? All right. You don't call your Lama, hey you. Okay? Roach. Well, maybe you do. Yeah. Can't tell me the year in which he was born. Approximate. Tunglo maybe. Not Takmandu. Tamandu. De Tunglo Shaki Yata. You can give me the year that he was born. Roughly. 650 AD. Okay? Yeah, let's see what the next question might be. Who's the next victim? He looks too innocent. How about Thelma? Ready? Don't pretend you're reading that book. One reason to study Buddhist logic. Any reason? Why do they say it's important to study Buddhist logic?
Because then once you understand it, you can help many people.
She said once you can understand it, you can help many people. How about a negative reason? By the way, you can help many people because then you learn mainly the idea of common ground, that the definition of good reason is Dayandaki Teni Shaki Mebe Echa. Dayandaki Teni Shaki Mebe Echa. Nobody can show me the definition of good reason. Dayandaki Teni Mebe Echa. Anybody got Q-tips? Dayandaki Teni Himbada. Is the definition of a good reason? Anything you give us a reason. Oh, take sound. It's a changing thing because it's a three-headed purple elephant. Three-headed purple elephant. It's a good reason, right?
No.
I didn't give it as a reason? You tell me I didn't give it as a reason? What's that? Hey, you thought you'd getting out of it. Stop that. Show. Huh? 당연하게 되니쇼. 저승 임바. 당연하게 되니 임바하. Is that, you telling me that's his definition?
Yeah.
Where the three relationships hold?
Yeah.
Is the definition of good reason? 마임바 타 예뻐. 당연하게 되니 임베이처. 예뻐 당연하게 되니. By the way, you can review everything this way. This is the way to really do it in the monastery. And you just truck through it in like 20 minutes. And you know it much better. The definition of a good reason is anything that exists. Yeah, you're in trouble. But keep going. So you're telling me anything that exists is not the definition of a good reason. Now you're in trouble. Now you're stuck. Sure. Give me something that doesn't fit. Tsunja Mayimba de Sho. Show me something that contradicts my definition. Right? If it's a bad definition, there must be something that doesn't fit my definition. Okay? I said Yepa, by the way. I said those things which exist. I'm not talking two-headed purple elephants, okay? I said anything which exists is the definition of a good reason. Show. He's going to give me an example of a counterexample, right? When I say show, shok means give me your counterexample. Come on. Show me the thing that doesn't fit my definition. Okay? Show me the thing that wipes out my definition. Okay? So show. You're in trouble, man. Yep, you know, Tanya Dagi, tell me, she dubna? Tanya Dagi, you can't say, she dubna? She dubna? She dubna? Oh boy, bad. Tayanda. Yime. Kyap. Okay, kyap. Anything that exists is a good reason. Period. It is. Shidumna tayanda ki, tayanda yime kyap. Everything in the universe is a good reason. For something. Okay. There is no definition of tayanda, okay, please. There is no definition of tayanda. It's de duki tayanda. Right? I don't mind. Go ahead. There is no definition of a good reason. You have to say a good reason in a particular context. You see what I mean? A good reason in a particular logical statement. But everything in the universe can be a good reason for something. You see what I mean?
Everything that exists as a class,
I don't mind. You want to take that? Huh? Okay, so I'll say, take everything that can be perceived by a valid perception as a totality. It exists because it exists as a totality. You tell me that's not a good reason? I didn't repeat it. I said that which is perceived by a valid perception to exist. And then I said it exists. And then I said because the totality exists. That's okay. Those are three separate things.
And you're saying you can perceive totality?
Sure. The Buddha does. That's the definition of Buddha. Okay. Okay. Oh, he gave me my weapon. All right. Okay, anyway. Better say you can't define a good reason. It has to be a good reason for a particular proof. Okay? Then you can say the definition of a good reason in a particular proof is te dubki sosum yimba. Yimba. Say te dubki sosum yimba. Te dubki sosum yimba. A reason where the three relationships hold. Okay? A reason where the three relationships hold. Mayimba tha. By the way, when you want to bridge on to a new subject, you say, no, it's not. And then you can say anything you want. You see what I mean? Then you can move on to any subject in the world. Okay? Mayimba tha. So dumbo shaki mebe che. Helen Mikhail. I forgot your pen, by the way. I had it in a bag and I forgot to bring it. Anyway. Cake thing. Okay. Empty. Give me any one of the three relationships. The definition of a good reason in a particular proof is that where the three relationships hold in the particular proof. What are the three relationships? Give me any one of them. Sho. Sho, sho. And Lindsay? Sho. Anyone? Yeah, the subject and the reason. There has to be a relationship between the subject and the reason. Take sound, it's a changing thing because it's a made thing. Okay? Take sound, it's a changing thing because it's a made thing. The idea of made thing must apply to the subject, which is sound. Does made thing apply to sound? Is sound a made thing? Yeah, so the first relationship holds. It's called chokchu in Tibetan, okay? Chokchu. Second one? Jacob. Say Jacob. Which means, if it's three, it must be two. Okay? Basically. That's the expression of the Jacob. It's not the Jacob. Okay? If a thing is made, it must be changing. Is that true? It holds. Now we check the third one. Somebody show. What's number three? Yeah, if it's not two, it can't be three, which is called the Dokyap. Okay? Dokyap. Those are the three relationships. They have to hold. Okay? Those three relationships have to hold. And then it's a good reason. Okay? For the particular proof. Okay? You always have to say that. Which brings us back to the original reason for studying Buddhist logic plus seeing. Negative reason. I mean, what's the goal of studying Buddhist logic? I mean, I'll tell you very honestly, I mean, the ultimate goal of this class is what's about to be said by Marie Placide. And I'll give you a clue. The Buddha made a mistake in one of his past lives. And then he said, we better study logic. She's going back to the positive reason, which is, you know, that you learn that you shouldn't present a Buddhist argument in a non-Buddhist country to try to help people and be using terms that they don't accept yet. You can't do that. Part of the tsul-sum, part of the three relationships has to be that they already agree to all three. Never forget that. They must already agree to all three relationships. They just didn't tie it together yet. Like it's almost a good qigu, a perfect opponent, is someone who's just temporarily blind to a truth which he should have seen a long time ago. He knows one is three. He knows if it's three, it must be two. He knows if it can't be two, it can't be three. But he just didn't tie it together yet. And your job as a Buddhist is just to tie it together for them. Oh yeah, I always wondered why I was suffering, you know. Yeah, I never did quite believe all those other stories. Oh yeah, I guess that would make sense if that's why I'm suffering. You know, it has to be make sense to them. Okay, but that's not the answer to my question. It's very inspiring, though. negative reason to study logic. It was in the first meeting. Sure. Yeah. So you don't judge other people. You can't tell. I mean, the ultimate purpose of Buddhist logic is to establish to yourself beyond a doubt, logically, that you don't know what other people are thinking, unless you can read their minds. Which is one of the ways to say it. Okay, I taught you Lord Atishan's way. The way I just said it is the way we say it in the monastery, in the debate ground. A little bit different, but same meaning. Unless you are me or someone like me, don't try to judge other people. You will fail. Who said? Lord Buddha. Why was he speaking from experience? He was the bad guy in that story, right? He was the guy who accused this bodhisattva of messing around in town. And then he was the guy who ended up going to hell for countless eons, okay? I mean, for many, many eons. And losing his monk's vows for many eons because he accused somebody of something and he didn't have a valid perception about it, okay? And that's all. That's the main thing. It's a mamipetayandat. It's a minawa mamipetayandat. What's a minawa mamipetayandat? Anybody in the mood? Yeah. Excuse me? Yeah. It's where it's a proof for the absence of something, where you're trying to prove the absence of something which cannot normally be perceived by that person's normal perceptions. Okay? It's like saying, consider the person in front of us. He shouldn't assert that hell really exists, because he hasn't had any valid perception that it exists. You see what I mean? And then hell, whether or not hell exists, is not something that most people can tell, okay, directly with their perceptions, okay? And that's an example. In this case, what's the church in? What are we talking about? Where did the Buddha make his error? What was the minawe dun? What was the thing he kelled in? But what was the object that he couldn't see that well? The other monk's intentions or the other monk's activities. I guess you could say the other monk's true intentions. He couldn't tell. He couldn't tell, but he thought he could tell. He assumed he could tell because of the outward behavior. Okay? And that's where he made his mistake. Okay? And the Buddha's, if you only come out of this class with understanding that logically, you've actually gone a long way to developing the ultimate goals of bodhicitta training and tantric training. You know, it's a profound truth that affects deeply your success in your practice of the secret teachings. You cannot tell. You don't know for sure. Okay? And that's actually very important. Okay? And if that's all you ever get out of this class, then it was worth like 10 weeks of boring syllogisms and stuff. Okay? I mean, if it even prevents you from one judgment of another person, you're ahead. It's worth 10 classes to come out of here at least tonight remembering that you can't really know what the people around you are thinking unless you can read their minds. And you can with practice. But that's another story. Okay? So, to me, that's the most important quotation, and you better learn it. It will be on the final exam. Okay? Okay? And memorize it. It should be like a mantra. It'll save you all this hell realm time, right? Okay? Who are we on to? Mr. Bill Kohler. Nobody could tell me the definition of existence in Buddhism. You're Kyaba Machu. There is no definition of existence in Buddhism. How do you know something exists in Buddhism? What's the test to say, I know that exists? You can. Yeah, anything which is perceived by a valid perception. Say, teme, mikpa, yope, teni. Better get used to it. It's like a mantra on the debate ground. Okay, teme, mikpa, yope, teni. Okay, teme, mikpa, yope, teni. Anything which you can perceive with a valid perception exists. What about Miss Laura Siegel, the unknown moons of Pluto? Meata, mepata. So I guess they don't exist. No, you can either say I agree, or why the hell did you say that? I didn't say anything like that. I knew you'd say that. Because nobody can perceive it with a valid perception. Good answer. She said Tamadu. I said the unknown moons around Pluto that we haven't discovered yet don't exist because no one has perceived them with a valid perception. And she said Tamadu, which means it's untrue. It's incorrect to say no one has perceived them with a valid perception. Yeah, Timmy Mipa Yatha. You're telling me somebody has perceived them with a valid perception? Sure. Yeah. Nam Ken. Say Kun Ken.
Kun Ken.
Kun Ken.
Kun Ken
Gi Sikh, okay? Sikh is what? The honorific of Tong. Okay? You don't say Buddha Tong. Say Buddha Sikh. Okay? The Buddha has, with his sacred eyes, balls, sacredly perceived. Yeah, that's a good answer. Okay. Okay. Oh, you want me to pick on you? Okay.
How do we know what the Buddha has perceived?
Only from what he states. You see what I mean? Yeah, we don't really know that he's seen. I'm just proposing moons that did exist. Okay. Only what he has stated, you know, in scripture. He taught for 50 years. He taught thousands and thousands of teachings. And
he never mentioned those.
No, he didn't mention those moons. We're assuming that he did or something like that. That's all. Yeah. You know, I'm not technically correct. We're not technically correct. Anyway, I'm saying they do exist. If they do exist, okay, how would they be, okay? Or anything else, okay? The true balance in my checking account. You know, something like that. You know, so anything like that. We know there must be one, but no one's perceived it. I mean, but if the Buddha is omniscient, he perceives it, or she, you know. Okay, while we're on the subject. You can't divide all existing things into two very convenient categories. I say you can't. You say, oh, you can't? Okay, we'll go to the next person. Okay. Kevin, can you? Don't think you're going to get out of it because of the camera thing. Can you? Two very basic categories. All existing things. Yeah.
What category? Any category?
Give me some very simple basic ones, like maybe the first one I taught you guys. Yeah. Changing things and unchanging things, okay? Mitakpa and takpa, okay? Mitakpa and takpa. Okay? Tapala shaki maybe. There's no such thing as unchanging things because you can't give me any example. I'm saying that. Yeah, then you say tamadu. Shaki yata. You can show me an example?
Sure.
Good. Sure. Sure.
Unchanging things?
Yeah. Good. Emptiness. All right. Or space, okay, empty space. Two good examples. You ready, madaman? No one could give me an example of a changing thing. Just say, I disagree. So, can you give me an example of a changing thing? Yep, fine. Okay, so that's the most basic division. Jehan, mitapala yewashenki mebeenshen. But you can't divide changing things. There's no basic division of changing things. Right? There's not. Okay. Oh. Tamadu. Mitakala yewa yuata. You tell me there are divisions of changing things? Chao. Mental things, physical things.
Those active things are neither mental.
Good. And changing things which are either mental or physical. Okay? Shepa, Sukh, and Deminduchi. Okay? Shepa, Sukh, and Deminduchi. Alas Chen. Shepa Teni Shaki Memecha. Shepa Teni Shaki Memecha. You couldn't ever show me an example of a mental thing. And don't get angry. Shaki Memecha, huh? If you can't give me any example of a mental thing. Shaki Memecha. Say Tamadu. Which means, it's not true I can't give you an example. I say, sho. Okay, give me some example of any mental thing, like an emotion. Now that's all, or wisdom, or ignorance, or jealousy, or anything else. Okay, that's all. That's all. Magda. The mind doesn't have a definition. There's no definition for a mental thing. What's the definition of a mental thing? Do you remember? It was, say, Selsing Rigpa. Selsing Rigpa. Sel can mean clear in the sense of invisible, and it can also mean aware. Okay, Shing means and, Rigpa means knowing. Okay, and I told you invisible and knowing. Okay, and then somebody asked me, how do you know it's not the Sel that means aware? And I said, well, it never made sense to me to define something as aware and knowing because they seem to be the same thing to me. You know what I mean? And I searched 120,000 pages today in the computer. It took about 20 minutes or something. And every example of that in the last 2,000 and a half years, right? And they never state anywhere absolutely clearly. There's one case in the Bodhisattva Charitara where he seems to say, the cell part doesn't mean invisible, it means aware, almost in the sense of self-awareness, like you're aware, like something mental should be a state of awareness, almost like self-awareness, and in the lower schools they say it is a self-awareness. Master Shantideva says it's not a self-awareness. And then Rigpa means knowing. So it's a difference between awareness and knowing. So I guess you could define it as aware and knowing, okay? I told you invisible and knowing, because to me, it's more useful to think of it that way. Probably, technically, it should be aware and knowing. But I think both are useful definitions. In the higher schools, if awareness means self-awareness, it doesn't exist and you can't explain it that way. But you could also have some kind of awareness that's not a pure self-awareness. You know, you are aware of yourself because you're aware of yourself the next moment. So you have some kind of awareness of yourself, even though it's not technically a self-awareness at the same moment. Okay, that's all. Anyway, Selsing Rigpa Shepa Teni. Definition of a mental thing is that which is aware and knowing. How's that? Okay? Knowing outside objects and aware somehow of quality of awareness. Okay? What do you got for Vilma? Sukhi Teni Shepa Teni. Nobody could give me a definition for a physical object, physical thing. Sukhitanishanyasa. You're telling me you can define physical matter? Wait a minute. You just said. I said no one can give me a. Well, technically you're correct. You just say you can't do it, right? I said no one can give me a definition of physical matter, and she said, wrong. So I said, well, I'm sorry. Sugitseni shaki mebeche. Nobody could give me a definition of physical matter. Sugitseni shaki yata. You're telling me somebody could give me a definition of physical matter? Sure. I hope it's you. She said anything that you can know with your five senses, okay? Knowing your five senses. Okay. Chiki kamge suk chuchen, okay? Chiki kamge suk chuchen, okay? Let's take, for example, the physical matter that exists in the Dharma Dhatu, okay? If you ever wondered what Dharma Dhatu really means, it is in Abhidharma, and it's the subject of the consciousness of the mind. Okay, it's what your mental sense looks at. It's the bunch of stuff in your mind, like the thoughts that you hear, belong in a category called the Dharma Dhatu. Okay, and pictures that you make in your mind belong in a category called Dharma Dhatu. That you make in your mind. I already got her. You see, she said anything you could point to with your five physical senses or something like that. Right? But see, in Abhidharma, okay, I'm cheating. When you visualize something, that's also a kind of color. And that counts as physical matter. It counts as physical form, okay? So in Abhidharma it says, if somebody wanted to defeat your definition, they'd say, hey, what about the purple that you see in your mind when I mention purple elephants? Okay? Is it a color? Yes. Can you see it with your five senses? No. Okay, so I asked him for a counterexample and I didn't get one. But I'm giving you a counterexample. Is that perceivable with your five senses?
It is if you know the color purple.
Huh?
It is if you know.
Oh yeah, I'm assuming we're talking about a person who does know. Uh-huh. That's all. There isn't a counterexample. So that's not the definition of physical matter. Anybody else got one? You're close. You're really close. Yeah, anything you can point to as being physical matter. Okay? And normally it has to be one of the five. I mean, it's hard to point to somebody's mind and say, you see that purple in Vilma's mind, you know? Yeah. Okay. But normally it's anything you can point to as being physical matter. Because it's so hard to define red, you see? How do you define red? You have to say, look, this is red. That's how you define physical matter. You know, physical matter is made up of colors and shapes, mostly. Visual physical matter. So you're like defining it by showing it. That's how you define physical matter. Something you can point to as being physical matter. Yeah? You could say that. I think you could say that. I'm not sure all the schools will accept that the purple that you visualize is physical matter. You know, by the way, if you really want to get into it, there's a distinction between particulate matter which is made up of tiny atoms of stuff, and matter in general. There's a distinction made. The Buddha's Sambhogakaya, the body you will have in your heaven, that is not made up of atoms, but it has colors and shapes. You can see it, but it's not like other kinds of matter. So that's very touchy. It gets very touchy when you get to a Buddha realm. It's physical matter, but not particulate matter. And there's a huge debate about it, okay? But it's not the same as the matter that makes up your bones and stuff like that, okay? Yeah.
So are they saying that the same faculty that can perceive physical form externally is the same faculty that perceives the mental image?
No. That's why I gave her as a counterexample. She restricted the definition to the five senses. And in Abhidharma, you have to count the one which is in the Dhamma Dhatu. Yeah. Okay? Let's see here. This is a little tiny. I think we just need an example of something that's changing, but not mental or physical. Okay? Ready? How about Kyapa Machu? Demenduchi. Okay? Demenduchi. Demenduchi. Changing thing that is not matter or mental. Kangsa. Kangsa, yeah. Okay? Kangsa. Andy. Okay? Andy's not Andy's nose, and Andy's not Andy's mind. Andy is something that we ascribe to the combination of those two. And it's a changing thing. Okay? All right. Excuse me? Yeah. Instead of mind, why not say?
When you say it's not a person, it's not physical or mental, why don't you say it's both? Person is both physical and mental.
Oh, that's very cool. He said, I understand why you can't say that Andy's mind is Andy, and I understand why you can't say Andy's nose is not Andy, but what about all of Andy's physical parts and all of Andy's mental parts together? Isn't that Andy? Okay? And that famous question in Madhyamika, very famous question. And the answer is, Kyapa Machu. Yeah, very beautiful answer. And it takes months and months in Madhyamika class to get to that. You know, he said, you have to draw a distinction between the inert or the simple combination of Andy's mind and Andy's body. There's a difference between that and Andy's mind and Andy's body thought of as Andy by all of us. And that's two different things. And until you think of him as Andy, just the simple combination of his mind and his body is not Andy. Okay? There's an additional requirement, which is in all the reading you're doing, it's called the imputating factor. So, you know, it's the, until there's the thought which imputes Andy to that mind and body, he's not the Demenduchi. He's not the person. Okay? There's a big difference between those two. Yeah.
Is that a way of meditating on emptiness also?
Very cool. Yeah. When we held up the pen in the class in the winter, and we did that exercise. First you concentrated on the white and the blue, without thinking of it as a pen, and then you looked at the white and blue and think of it as a pen. And you can strip off, a good meditation on emptiness is to strip off your imputation of it as a pen and just look at white, blue cylinder. And then lay it back on. It's like one of these things. It's like one of these transparencies. You can think of this pen as a blue and white cylinder and not think of it as a pen. Look at it the way an Eskimo would. If an Eskimo came in here from 500 years ago and saw this thing in my hand, they would think, boy, beautiful, blue and white stick. I wonder how they got it so smooth. You know? And then you're looking at it a different way. You're imputing, or you're laying on it another conception of pen. And that's a good exercise for meditating on emptiness. You can strip it away and you can put it back on. You know? You can think of it as a pen and then think of it as a cylinder. And then think of it as a pen, and then think of it as a cylinder. And you get used to the idea that its penness is not a self-existent quality. It's not innate. It's coming from you. And if you get more sophisticated, you go to the blue and the white itself and see if you're not doing the same thing with that. And if you keep that up, it's very powerful. You know, it's a very good emptiness meditation. But be delicate with it. Don't go around saying there's no pen, or I will tickle you with it. Okay? All right? I'm not suggesting there's no pen. Anyone who thinks so can come up during the break, and I'll do my thing. No, I'll tickle you with a tickling machine. Okay. Okay, you know my favorite class of this whole thing. What is what? Chichedak. Okay, say Chichedak. Chichedak. Chicheda meaning quality and characteristic. If you want to think of it more crudely, generals and specifics. Okay. sets and members of the sets. But if you want to get sophisticated, and hopefully you did some meditation on it, quality and characteristic. Very delicate. The truth behind that and the truth behind real changing mitakpa, real changing quality and gross changing quality are both things that I want you to explore in the next month. Okay? Try to see subtle, what they call subtle impermanence. Try to see the subtle changing nature of a thing as opposed to the obvious changing nature of a thing. I mean, if I pull this beads apart and they all fall on the ground, that's the gross impermanence or the gross changing quality of this thing. But there's another thing happening here. You know, even as we talk, moment to moment, millisecond by millisecond, even more subtle than that. And they say you have to have a lot of virtue and you have to meditate a lot to see that. You can't see it right now. You know I'm talking about something. You believe there's a deeper impermanence there that it would be very cool to see, but you have to practice it. And that's a very good thing to do in the next month, okay? It takes a lot of practice to see subtle impermanence. It takes a lot of meditation. It takes a lot of serious meditation to perceive that directly. And it takes even more to perceive the difference between a quality and a characteristic. Okay? It takes a lot of careful thought and meditation. If you want something to do for a month, start with subtle impermanence and then go on to see if you can understand the quality and something being read the reading on quality and characteristic. I don't remember which number it was. Do you?
Three?
Read reading number three over and over again. And if you want something to do for the next month that would seriously contribute to your seeing emptiness directly, concentrate on that one. And it's hard. You know, the sign that I know if you're reading it is you'll come like John Stilwell and say, why are those quotation marks around all those things? Okay? I mean, that's a sign that you read it, okay? And think about that. It's the same subject, okay? Why are those quotation marks around those things? You know, what's the difference between car and quote car? You know? And if you get it, you'll be very close to seeing emptiness. Okay? It's very, very important. Extremely important. Okay? So, go to subtle impermanence. Play with that. When you get tired of that, they call it, there's a special word called alternating meditation. Normally it's between shamatha and vipassana. But you can do it between subtle impermanence and quality. And in your practice for the next month, month and a half, alternate. When you get dried out on one, go to the other one until you get very good at it, you know. And then they say you can just flip between them and try to figure it out. Try to figure out the difference between car and quote car. And you'll be very close to seeing the true nature of dependent origination, which is extremely close to seeing emptiness. Okay? Yeah. With a car or with quality itself? Oh, that's nasty. That's really nasty. I would say one is quality as a Jung called it, what do you call it? And what do they call it? An archetype. Yeah, it's similar to that idea. Okay? Quality as an archetype. Quality as a perfect concept as opposed to quality in real life. You know? Quality as an ideation, you know, quality as a concept, and then quality as it applies to an object. You know what I mean? And see, that's a very subtle. I mean, I wouldn't go that far. I would just work on car versus quote car. You know what I mean? And then when you get really good at that, you can go to quality and quote quality. You know what I mean? But basically, if you understand why in English we can have four different distinctions, car, quote car, a car, and the car. Why do we use those? Why do we distinguish in English between car, quote car, a car, and the car? And if you meditate on that for a month, you might get very close to seeing dependent origination, which itself is very difficult. And that takes you to the door of seeing emptiness directly. You have to go through seeing dependent origination first. The real meaning of dependent origination. How you are using ideation or conceptualization to get to things? Why are you using archetypes or mental images, dunqis? You know, that would be a good meditation. Okay, car, quote car, a car, and the car. Okay. Yeah. Oh, it doesn't matter. I don't think the order matters. Probably I'd start with the easy ones, like a car, the car. Okay. But if you get the difference between those, you'd be well on your way. Excuse me? They don't have the articles that we have in English. They don't have a, they don't have the, but there's ways of expressing it in the syntax of a sentence that is clear which one they mean, and they're different. Okay. The four distinctions are there in every language in the world because every human mind thinks that way. Why are they there, as I'm asking? You know, is what I'm asking. Yeah. Excuse me? She said, does that help meditate on subtle? How to meditate on subtle impermanence? I would say this. She said, I understand how you're describing to meditate on quality and characteristics. How do I meditate on subtle impermanence? There are a couple of clues, okay? One, meditate on why it's true, according to Buddhism, that the beginning of a thing destroys it. Why the beginning of a thing destroys that thing without any need for any other influence. You know, the birth of a child kills the child. You know, why? Why is that? And Buddhism is very strict about it. It says, without any other external causes needed to kill the child. Just the fact of its being born. And it applies to pens and chairs and everything else. New York City, you know. Why? How is it that the creation of a thing destroys it without any other intervening factors necessary? Okay. That would be one way to meditate on subtle impermanence. Another clue, I'm just giving you clues, okay, would be, why is it that when the mala or the rosary is created, we say it has a beginning, and then it stays for a while, and then it ends. We say it has a beginning and an ending and a staying, right? Sometimes they leave out the staying in order, they say in the scripture, to enhance your renunciation. Okay, but we won't do that. Because people say stay, they cling to the stay, and they forget the end. And they in the Abhidharma scriptures, some of them leave out the staying. They don't want people to get attached to this thing, okay? Beginning, staying, and ending applies to the rosary. But a very heavy thing. Does this rosary have its own emptiness? Yeah. What is the emptiness of this rosary? It's the fact that it's not anything other than a projection forced on me by my past karma. Okay? It's not anything else than that. What's its dependent origination? The fact that I am forced to project it as a result of my past deeds. Okay? That's its dependent origination. Its emptiness is that it couldn't have been anything else. It couldn't have been anything else. If you want to meditate, you know, if Ellie's in the mood, after you finish that other stuff about the subtle impermanence of this, the subtle changing nature of this thing, then meditate on why its emptiness is tattva. Its emptiness is unchanging. The rosary is changing. And you cannot say that the emptiness begins, and you cannot say that the emptiness ends. You must say the emptiness came into being, and the emptiness came out, you know, went out of being. But you can't say it stopped or it began, because that implies change. Try to explore the difference between those two things. Explore the difference between the rosary beginning and stopping, and then the emptiness of the rosary, which never changes. It comes into being and it goes out of being, but it never begins or ends. Last question, if you destroy the rosary, does its emptiness go away? Yes. Okay. Do you destroy the emptiness? No. And you, if you want to understand subtle impermanence, explore those things. And the, I can't tell you more. You must meditate. You know, you can't see any more than that if you don't meditate on it. You know, I can't describe to you any more about that. You know, you have, I'm telling you there's a vast and vital difference between those two things. But I can't, but then from here, from there you have to take the ball and run with it. You know what I mean? Then you have to meditate. If you don't meditate on it, you will never get it. Okay? You must be in a deep state of meditation to get these, that and the quality and characteristic. You'll never get it in a class. You have to go home and meditate on it. And you must. It's something you must grasp those two concepts to see emptiness directly. They are hurdles over which you must jump to get to the direct perception of emptiness. And no teacher can give you anything more than what I just did. Now you have to go and meditate on it. You can't see it any other way. It's a Kelvin, right? It's too deep, okay? That's a description, it's not a perception. You're not perceiving it. You're perceiving my description of it. To perceive it, you have to go and learn to, you have to go and meditate at least an hour a day. Okay? Yeah.
You said it's emptiness goes away, and then,
yeah. But it doesn't change. And it does, it is not destroyed. And why we can, why we have to say that, you have to go meditate on it. Okay? Alright. Let's take a break, because that's pretty, auspicious. Okay? Go have your, non-existent drinks and food and, I suppose you can have something out in the courtyard, I guess. It's like, So you better know the three kinds of cheese. All right? Very important to see emptiness. You better know why it's important to understand quality and characteristic to see emptiness. Okay. Those of you who took the future Proof of Future Lives class, you studied the idea of a material cause. And you're going to have to understand a material cause, what a material cause is. Again, it's the stuff that flops over into the thing. For example, the clay for a ceramic pot or the seed for a tree. And you're going to have to understand that and understand its application to future lives, to proving future lives. One of the things that you will be called on most to do in the United States as the first American Buddhists will be to defend the idea of future lives. They say if you don't believe in future lives, it's very hard to make any progress in Buddhism. And I think that the idea of future lives may be getting diluted by the New Age interpretation of Buddhism. You see what I mean? I mean, it's very much a reason to study Buddhism that you aren't going to die when you die. It's not over. You know, you do have to go somewhere. And we can't just cover it up or pretend that's not true. It's very important to teach people that and to explain to them why that's true. Because going on from there is a very frightening process. And you can't do anything about it if you don't believe it. So we shouldn't lose that teaching. That should be a strong teaching in American Buddhism. It shouldn't be that Buddhism becomes sort of a cult of feeling good or something like that, or of feeling happy in your meditation or something like that. You are dealing with very violent circumstances of so-called your future life, your next life. And it's no joke. And we have to be able to explain to people logically why that's true. Okay? You already had that. You already had that. I think it's important to know what a valid perception is. What makes a perception valid? Okay, Sautami Lui Rigpa. Okay, new unerring perception in this school. The new part in this school, because this school doesn't accept that memory is a tsema, is a pramana. Okay, two kinds of valid perception. This one and this one. Okay? And they're both in... Why is that important in Buddhism? There are many things that you can't see with your eyes. Like, when you're dealing with America, and you're dealing with capitalism, and you're dealing with life in New York City, it's all what you can see. It's the realm of what you can see and touch and buy, you know. But when you're dealing with Buddhism and trying to escape this realm into another realm, much of what you're dealing with is invisible right now, you know. Much of what you're dealing with is you can't see right now. You know, you hear me talk about hells. You hear me talk about a Buddha paradise. You hear me talk about all this stuff. You have to be able to develop your capacity of reasoning so that you can move beyond what you can see. And you can't get there any other way. You know, the original or the initial perceptions of emptiness, the initial perceptions of your future lives are going to be this one. You know, they're going to be of something that you can't see with your eyes. And you're going to have to develop your powers of reasoning to where you can accept it because it's logical. And you can act on it because it's logical. And you've got to get to that point. Later on, it will become a direct perception, as much as this. You will be able to see your future lives. You will be able to see the day of your enlightenment. You'll be able to confirm the existence of your other lives directly. But there has to be the reasoning first, okay? And you have to get used to the idea that the perception which sees the beads this way and the perception which sees the beads this way are totally equal in their validity. They're both as powerful as the other. And you have to get used to that because you are in a realm called Buddhism where many of the places you have to go to reach your goals in this life are going to be invisible to you. You know, and especially the higher teachings, the secret teachings, they run off of logic. You know, because if you trust your emotions or your culture, you won't be able to do them. You won't be able to practice them. You know, they have to be, by that time you have to be running off of very powerful logic because your culture is running the opposite way. You know, and your instincts might run the opposite way and you have to depend on on reasoning and on logic. And because at that point so much is invisible that there's very little to be, you know, that you can see and confirm with your eyes or your nose. You know, the texts say that, by the way. You know, by the time you get to that stage of the higher teachings that are necessary to reach enlightenment in one life, you're not running on your nose and your ears and your eyes anymore. You're running on your spiritual sense based on logic. You know, based on reasoning. And it's much more, it's a difficult place to be in. And you might as well get used to it now. You have to establish truth by thinking carefully and not ignoring these questions anymore because you can't see those things. Death is real whether you can see it or not. What's going to happen to you after that is real whether you can see it or not. The forces that created this world and that are creating your death are invisible, but you goddamn well better figure them out. And you don't have much time. You know what I mean? And so reasoning is, you have to know the two kinds of valid perception, okay? Three kinds of good reasons. The two kinds of negatives, and again, I stress the negatives, the study of negatives. The most important negative of all is what? Emptiness, okay? Megat, the simple absence of something. I want you to study the different kinds of negatives so that you get a deep appreciation for the fact that emptiness is the simple absence of something. And that will disqualify about 95% of the wrong ideas about emptiness because they're all positives or mayingaks, but they're not megats, okay? They are not the simple absence of something that never existed, never could exist, never will exist. Okay? And get used to that. And every time you meet a person who claims to be teaching emptiness and they describe it any other way, say, hey, wait a minute, is that a megak or a mayingak or a dupa? You seem to be describing a positive thing. You know, that's not what emptiness is. Emptiness, every book says emptiness is a megak. Emptiness is an absence of something. It's not like some golden light or some black light or watching your mind, okay? or watching your thoughts come and go, or something like that. Those are not megots. They are not the absence of something. Okay, can't be emptiness. Automatically disqualified. Two types of relationships are important. Okay, there's a relationship between quality and characteristic, and there's a relationship between cause and effect. And it's good to know the difference. Okay. Especially when you're studying karma. Okay. The ultimate application of a reason to prove the absence of something. Okay. The ultimate application of that one. You got to work on that. Remember that long question where you had to identify all the elements in a logical question, in a logical statement? That's on the final. Okay. All right. If you didn't figure it out yet, you know, go to the Three Jewels on Saturday and Sunday. You know, get some help. Huh? Yeah, there were 14. You know. Yeah. If you know that, you know formal logic. You can go through all the other shmeels and memorize the definitions and all that. But if you know this is the subject, this is the thing you're proving, blah blah blah, then you'll be all right. Then you understand logic. You know, whether you use it or not is another thing. Okay. We studied, the last thing we studied was the subject of time. And there was this cute little question where you had to fill in the three different groups and stuff like that. I like that question, okay? Especially important, I think, to look into in what sense is, what did we say? Future, base, the base future? The future water pitcher? Future for the water pitcher. We said it a better way, though. What was it? Future pitcher, was that it?
Yeah.
Being related to the cause of a pitcher? Pitcher future, yeah. Pitcher future. It's pitcher future being somehow related to the cause of a pitcher. Okay? Pitcher future is somehow related to the cause of a pitcher. And you have to think, there's some things you have to think about. Unfortunately, you can't just answer them. Okay. That's all the final stuff. It's a custom in the monastery. You know, when they examine you for your geshe, they torture you for like 7 to 10 days or something. And you get to do all these different things, painful things, you know, and it's a really hassle. And then slowly you get to the week and you start getting towards the end of the week and you know you're reaching the end. The last part is the most difficult. Everybody in the monastery can come up and pick on you, you know, and ask you questions. Everybody. And you just have to sit there, like, late into the night. And finally, you know, the debate master says, he makes some sign, you know, like, duh, and then it's all finished, you know, and then everybody sits down, and there's this big quiet. And it feels so good, you know, and then you know you're done, you know. And then one guy gets up. I don't know how they choose the guy, I still don't know. And he gets up and he makes a certain debate to you. And I thought it'd be auspicious to end on that debate, okay? You have this in your reading, okay? I designed this particular exchange with a whole bunch of sneaky stuff in it. So you have to practice it, you have to think about it, you have to look at it. Both sides get a chance to be right. And both sides are wrong. Or are they? Okay? And you have to think about it. Okay? So, we'll do it with, who do we pick on? Ellie, you ready? Okay? Does samsara have a limit? Okay. I say samsara does have a limit. Okay. Does have an end. Okay. Samsara does have an end. Think about it. Okay. First stop and think about it. You know. You know, is every pain you've ever had to come from a bad deed? That bad deed had to come from a former state of ignorance. That ignorance had to come from former bad deeds, etc. There was no beginning. Okay? That's scary because it makes you feel like maybe there's no end. You know what I mean? And that's the debate. This is from Parchin. This is from the study of the perfection of wisdom. Okay? Korala-ta-yubhe-cha. I say there's an end to samsara. She said, you can't say do to a cheer. Korala-ta yubhe-cha. Because there is an end to samsara. Yeah, you just repeat my verb. I said yeah, it has. Okay, yarata. You telling me there is an end to samsara? So there must be a beginning end to samsara, right? Yarata. Tell me there's a beginning. What did I say? We say a front end and a back end. In Tibetan, there's a word front end and back end. Okay. When somebody asks you, does samsara have an end? You have to say, do you mean front end or back end? Okay. Front end, yeah. There is an end to samsara. There is no end to samsara?
There's a back end, but no front end.
Don't get so... All you can do is say yes or no, I'm sorry. Okay?
Yes, there's an end.
No, there's not. Because there's no final end. There's no back end to samsara. Chitta may be here. There's no back end to samsara. No, you should say Dhamma do or Kyama Machin. Huh. So there is a back end to samsara?
Yeah.
You tell me there is?
Yeah.
No, there's not, because samsara is limitless. Ho ho! Ho ho, by the way, means, nah, I gotcha! Okay. So you're telling me it is limitless. Kyama Machin means it is limitless, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have an end. When you say Kyama Machin, that's what you're saying. Okay, it is limitless, but it doesn't have an end. So it is limitless.
No.
She says tamadu. They say kyamatu. You guys want to make up your minds? Oh. So it's not limitless. Right? Samsara is not limitless. So if the beginning of something is infinite, the thing is not infinite. If I can count my past lives and never end in the counting, that's not limitless? It'll never end. I can't, if I start to count my past lives, you know, like if I count this one as one and my last one as two, there is no end. It's infinite. It's infinite. So it's limitless. It's limitless. It has no limit.
If you're going in reverse.
In reverse. So numbers themselves are not infinite. Numbers are finite?
If there's a number, it's finite.
Are the total number of numbers finite or infinite?
The total number of possible numbers is infinite.
Infinite. Right? Yeah. Right?
Is
the number of numbers infinite? Why? Because you can always add one more.
Right.
Okay, that's all. You can always add one more. So the front end has a limit, like one. Integers, okay? Positive integers. Has one. And it goes infinitely. So we call it infinite. Yimbata. Duh. So samsara is infinite. Duh. So samsara never ends because it's infinite. You just said it's infinite. Huh? But numbers are infinite the other way and you still say it's infinite. What are you talking about? You don't say numbers are infinite? Lives are, oh, ta. So, show me the first past life you had.
Huh?
Future lives are finite? I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, are your lives finite or infinite?
Are you talking past or future?
I'm saying lives. My question is lives. I'm not saying past or future. You're saying past or future. If you want to get up and debate me, you can do it. I'm asking you. Are your lives infinite or finite? So they're infinite. So samsara doesn't have an end. Because samsara is infinite. Huh? It is infinite. It is infinite. You don't say one end. Somebody asks you, are numbers infinite? You say, yes they are. Why? Because they're infinite in one direction. It's the same thing. Rigpa Gotung. Same thing. You call numbers infinite because they stretch on infinitely in one direction. Right? So some size infinite? Same thing! What's the difference? I can count my past life backwards and never finish. Same thing. Exactly the same thing.
Okay, that's how you define it.
That's how I define it. So samsara is infinite, right? So samsara is infinite. Samsara is infinite. Then. In the same way that numbers are infinite. I mean, what's the definition of infinite? What's the example of infinite? From this point in space, you can travel into the universe and never reach an end. That's infinite, right? So from that point of the current life and working backwards, you can never find a last life. That's infinite. That fits every sense of infinite that you can give me. Right? So samsara is infinite. Well, you give me a definition of infinite if you don't like my definition. Seriously. Get straight here. You define infinite. I say infinite in the mind of everybody in this room means they're standing on planet Earth and they look up at the sky and they realize that if they kept traveling in some kind of spaceship or something, they would never reach the end of the universe. That there's always one more inch. There's always one more inch. Or the other meaning of infinite would be you start numbering with numbers and you can't reach the end because you can always just add one more. So it's infinite. It's unending. You give me a bed, you want to change it? Do you think everybody in this room thinks of infinite in any other way?
Or.
That's how they think of infinite.
Or.
Come on, I grew up in America. What do you have? What else?
I had infinite previous lives.
Huh? Infinite means you can always add one more and you can't reach the end of it. No, we have to define. We don't have common ground here. We don't have common ground. We don't have common ground. We don't have common ground. We have to make sure we mean the same thing when we say infinite. From my current perspective, going into the thing I'm talking about, I can always add one more. To me, that's infinite. What are you talking about direction? From my rear end, the universe is infinite. From my front end, the universe is infinite. I'm not kidding. You don't tell me direction. Okay?
You're saying from your front end.
From my back end too, it's infinite. I turn around, it's infinite. It is. Come on, I'm not joking. Come on. You can go the other way, okay? Go down from one, split it in half, it's a half. Go split that, it's a quarter. Split that in eighth. It's infinite that way too. Back end and front end. You want a back end? You got a back end. I'm not kidding. It's infinite. It's infinite. That's the meaning of infinite. Yimba ta. Or you give me another meaning. Show me something else that's infinite.
Past lives are infinite.
Huh?
I'll give you the past lives
are infinite. So past lives are infinite.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I got you. This is the crux. So past lives are not samsara.
Past lives are samsara, but they're not.
Past lives are samsara. Yimba ta.
She must believe that samsara is infinite.
No, you just...
Come on, just come on. You said it right. You said...
You have a red outfit on.
You said past life is samsara. So samsara is infinite, right?
You have a red outfit on. Those
wait, 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 wait. Just
red.
Get to the
therefore
subject. Don't talk to my... Not my... Yeah, my yeah. Get back to the question here. Are past lives infinite? Duh. Our past lives, nirvana.
No.
So there must be samsara. So samsara is infinite.
Talk to me true.
Oh, so if my past lives are infinite, my samsara is not infinite.
Duh.
So my past lives are not samsara.
How do you say that again?
So my past life are samsara.
Yeah.
So if these beads... I don't know how to say. Are these beads round?
Yeah.
And if they're round, do they have a circular outline?
Yeah.
So these beads have a circular outline.
Yeah.
So, if that's true, then let's go the other way. Are my past lives infinite?
Yeah.
Are my past lives samsara?
No. They're not samsara.
They're not samsara? Nirvana imana. So they're not produced by my bad deeds and mental afflictions. Huh? In general. By the way, we're talking about past samsaric lives, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Buddha doesn't have lives anymore. It's just one. Okay. So past lives are samsara, right? I'll do it again, you know, and the monastery said, come on, I'll make it easy for you guys. Is the bead round? If something's round, does it have a circular outline? So can we say that beads have a circular outline?
Yeah.
Right. Got it? Are your past lives... Are the beads round? Each individual round bead. If it's round, does it have a circular outline? So therefore we can say that beads have a circular outline. Right. Now, are past lives infinite? Are forced past lives samsara? So samsara is infinite, but same reasoning. I don't know. Contented. Say contented. Contented. Okay, whatever you want to make up is fine with me, you know. Contented. Oh, okay. So samsara doesn't have an end. Because it's infinite. In means negative, finite means has an end. Fini. Right? And we just got through them. Back and front end doesn't matter. If it's infinite in one direction, it still counts as infinite. Okay, so it's infinite. So samsara doesn't have an end. Samsara does have an end. Why? I'm sorry, if samsara is infinite? That's what I'm saying. I say you can't. I'm saying we could just go home.
Because then you are not in a life anymore. You're not in life after life anymore.
Right.
Therefore, there is an end.
No, I say it's no end. There is no end.
Because
it's infinite. Samsara la chita yata. You tell me samsara has a... We'll go to the end, okay? We got two more minutes. This is considered a very auspicious way to end the class, okay? Kora la chita yata. You telling me that there isn't back end to samsara?
Yeah.
Say duh. Yette. Why the hell? Why? Say dangzingi. Nyambo. Tomden. Yimbeche. Yubeche. Say, Dangzingi. Nyambo. Topden. Yubeche. Because the tendency to hold things as self-existent has a powerful antidote, which is called the direct perception of emptiness. That proves you don't have to suffer. That proves you don't have to suffer anymore. Okay? Period. End of debate. And then everybody goes, ready? Okay. Okay, that's in your... Jackie's going to like that one.
I'll picture that on screen.
Okay. And then you've got this thing in your heart, like your Geshe's over, you know, and you can go home and have some tea. Okay. Okay, I have a few thank yous. Anne and Lizzie for doing the altar. Thank you. Seamus for doing the sound. By the way, if you see one of these guys struggling up the steps with 12 boxes, you know, help them, all right? Jahan, Randy Tavildi, and Pete Johnson for running the class. Say again? Okay. Thank you for that. And Kevin and Deborah for the video. Uh, Okay, a couple of things, and then we'll stop. We have to stop. Next class, I think, starts around May 19th. And as I said, it will be Lojong. Total departure from this class, okay? I'm just trying to make sure you come back, okay? It's very sweet teachings that were invented about 1,000 years ago about how to have a good heart from day to day, in your office, in your family, at home, how to develop a good heart. And we'll do some very famous Lojongs. One is called By the Diamond Lion, Dorje Senge. And the one that I really like, which I don't think has been taught in this country that I'm aware of, is called Shenba Shido. Pabongka Rinpoche used to love it. It's Sakya, very powerful, by Drapa Gyantin, very, very great lama of our lineage. And so that will be the Friday night. We'll concentrate down on that on Friday night. And Punso's going to continue. He has a really good meditation class on Wednesday nights. I think it's good if you keep coming on Wednesday nights. And it's been a really nice class. Can do that. Hope some of you have some time to do retreats during the break. Okay? And I can't remember anything else. I wanted to say one thing. As I said at the beginning, Gyaltsep Jay said the kindest thing Jetsun Kapa ever did for him. You know, he taught him all these tantras, he taught him all these incredible meditations, everything. He said the kindest thing he ever did was to teach me logic. You know, and really, I feel very proud that we did a transmission. What we just did was a transmission. You know, you haven't delved into years of logic. I mean, it could be years, right? But you have a very, very thorough understanding of all the main subjects of Buddhist logic. And I don't want to see it die in America. You know what I mean? The transmission has occurred. You see what I mean? The book is there. Most of it. Try to finish it, okay? And now I want to see you pass it on to other people. It's very, very important for the perception of emptiness. You must have it. It's called the key to emptiness. And don't let it stop with you now. I did my job. My shtick's finished, okay? Transmitted. You know what I mean? And now you have to go over it and you have to transmit it to other people. Okay? And that's a big transmission. You're talking about really it going from the Eastern world to the Western world. And this is one big group of people, the survivors of the logic class, class 13. You know? You're the survivors of the logic class. And now you have to transmit it to other people. Okay? You really have to, take good care of this knowledge. And make sure, don't leave logic for last. You know, don't say, teach it to your students. And make them do logic. And make them do debating. Please learn debating. We'll start debating now in all of the classes. And start doing it with each other. Okay, and follow the rules. All right? I also want to thank John Stilwell, who does a lot of work. And I want to thank you really for coming because it forces me to learn these things again. And you're very kind. I perceive you as very kind to ask me to teach and to keep having me teach. I take it as a great kindness. It's for me a very beautiful life and a very precious time. Okay? So we'll do some prayers, all right?
This is the end of class 11.
You have been listening to The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute.
The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.